This is a Collider.com audio interview.
You know, interesting stuff just been coming up as we're talking directly with Cass and everyone is that when, especially when Antoine was making the movie, he wasn't as aware that the political ramifications of the movie would be as strong, or just the idea of...
We're surprised by how strongly everybody's reacting. It's great.
Since they've been reacting that way, and just from the TV spots and trailers I've seen, it hasn't really been reflected. Is there any idea of trying to...
We're definitely going to have that conversation with Paramount. No, seriously, because it's interesting. The international journalists reacted that way, the TV, domestic, and now print. I mean, everybody's been reacting positively, thankfully, and really particularly liking the political agenda, which is fun. I'm glad you guys like it.
Another thing that keeps coming up was how you changed the end of the film. And was that really because the audience were dissatisfied without them? Dying?
We didn't show it to an audience.
Oh, you didn't? Then see, everybody's telling us that a test audience that they were disappointed.
We've never the first test we had was with this ending, actually. We showed it to some friends along the way, so maybe that's what they're referring to. You know what? When I first saw the movie, I said the ending doesn't work anymore. So we started talking about it in mid-November about what it should be, well before anybody had seen the movie. Movies are sort of like organisms. They change as you're making them. They grow, they mutate. And this movie mutated along the way and became a little more muscular, a little more... Danny and Ned played the villains so deliciously. They really demanded a different ending for them. That's really the mutation that occurred more than anything, though. It was Danny and... I mean, when you see them in that cabin, they're so smug and arrogant. They just deserve everything that's going to come to them, you know? And it pisses you off, you know? You know, so it's that abuse of power, I think, that we all resent. Whatever your political strain is, you don't like your representatives acting in the manners that, forget about the evil deeds they're doing, that sort of cavalier attitude about what their entitlement is something pisses me off when people in any authority, government, corporations, Enron, you look at all those guys, it's the same thing. It's a sense of we're allowed to do whatever we want to do and damn the consequences. Well, I don't feel that way.
But did you really conceive of an action movie like this without serving the bad guys some justice?
Well, they had justice. It was just a different thing. It was just a different version of it. It just didn't feel right. I don't know how to say it other than that. Just when you watched it, you were like, you know... It doesn't feel cathartic in its ending.
Audiences wanted the need to cheer when Ned Beatty and Danny are blown away, right?
Well, they do tend to cheer, yes. Particularly, I think they're shocked that we kill a U.S. senator. I think they're kind of shocked by that, but they definitely cheer when we kill Danny. Our ending we constructed without having shown it to an audience, so our ending was not... influenced. It's certainly influenced by what we think an audience is going to want, but it was not influenced by actually an audience telling us what they wanted. But really, again, it comes back to what I was saying before, is I got so angry at Danny and Mel, Danny and Ned along the way that it just changed. It suddenly mutated into some other need to really see him go down.
Was there any input at all from Stephen Hunter?
A little bit. It was really interesting. I'm a huge Stephen Hunter fan, and this movie's influenced as much by the Earl Swagger books as by the Bobby Lee Swagger. I don't know if you guys know that, but there's two series of books. One's about the fathers, and one about Bob Lee's father, and the other's about Bob Lee. And both men are honed from the same sort of steel. Stephen, it was a little bit worrisome to be doing the critic of the Washington Post book. And I really love Bob Lee, so I didn't want to screw that up, you know. So I called Stephen very early in the process, and he was thrilled that somebody was willing to take it on again, because this book suffered multiple demises at Paramount before we did it. And he said something. He said, look, I'm a novelist, you're a filmmaker, I trust you guys. And when we tried to suck him in, he wouldn't allow himself to get sucked in. It was really interesting. He really said, you know what, you guys do the version you believe in. I know the difference between the mediums. And I'm a novelist. I'm not a filmmaker. So
has he seen it yet?
He did, and he liked it. Thank God.
Oh, good.
Yeah, yeah. We did. Yeah. Well, the biggest change being it was funny because I sent him the script early on, and I never heard back whether he liked it or didn't like it. I was like, "Huh? Does that mean he didn't like it?" And I realized I don't think he ever read it. I think he said, "You know what? I'm not going to interfere. I'm not going to let that my biases be the thing that drives these guys."
Right.
Yeah, he loved Bob Lee. You know.
Have you optioned any of the other books?
I think one or two are optioned, but they own the character, so it's effectively like optioning it.
Mm-hmm. So you have a pretty big movie coming out this summer, some Michael Bay independent movie. I was curious, you've been slowly showing footage to certain people, and wanted to know if you could give us an update.
Well, yeah, we were very proud of what we've seen so far of the movie, and we thought it was time to show some people so that the hardcore fan base could relax a little bit. They're not relaxing a lot, but they've relaxed a little bit since we put it out. It's a lot of fun, and it's very true to its characters. I think actually doing the Transformers and doing Shooter have similar, you know, when anybody's passionate about something, you have a certain responsibility to try to deliver what drove their passion. You know, what is great on Transformers is that people have made a lot of assumptions about what they're going to look like, and they're all wrong because we haven't even seen them, so I don't know what they think they've seen. There isn't a single visual effects shot that's finished in the movie yet. So what's great is that it's going to keep getting better and better.
How nervous are you with the release date coming up pretty soon, 3 months away?
This was planned. We're right on schedule. So far, everything has moved really, really sensationally. We finished on time, on budget, and our visual effects are coming in on schedule.
Bernie told us about.
They're just really complicated. So they take a long time. So we see, and we've seen them in process. So we've seen the evolution of a lot of the shots.
I don't know. Perhaps it hasn't been figured out. But have you already thought about a running time for the film? Has that been set information?
No. I think it'll be longer than people expect because it's very entertaining.
Bernie Mac told us about his funny cameo as the salesman.
He's insane in the movie.
Transformers.
He's so insane. I can't believe it.
I'm wondering. How much can you have fun with things like that before it gets too out of the zone of Transformers?
I think it's everybody's sort of internal barometer, you know, and it's like, I personally can't take 32-foot size metal robots all that seriously. On the other hand, I take what they represent very seriously. So it's that sort of balance where you say to yourself, you know what, let's not pretend we're making War and Peace. We're not. We're making, but people feel really passionate about what these Autobots and Decepticons stand for, and there's a very rich mythology, so there's a real demand to deliver that. So for the non-fan of it, we had to have enough fun with it that they would be entertained. And for the fan, we had to take it very seriously what we were executing around the Autobots and the Decepticons.
I was going to go into Stardust for a second, if you don't
okay,
mind.
Okay, sure.
I heard that your test screening out in Pasadena had very, very high test scores.
It did,
and
which I was surprised by, actually.
And how has it been going on that as well?
Exceedingly well. It's a weird thing to say. I don't think everybody's going to love the movie. Because it's not a movie that's designed to be that. And yet, when we went and tested it, they really flipped for it. So it caught me off guard. It was a movie where I expected to have a larger portion of the audience sort of go, well, that's sort of out there. I'm not sure it's for us. And what happened was that we delivered, I think, the romance so spectacularly well. Matthew did such a good job with it. That it caught a segment of the audience in that I wasn't expecting.
Now, well, I've heard an anecdote, actually, along that line, saying that the studio is afraid to call it a fairy tale, similar to like A Princess Bride, and that Matthew really wants to call it that, and it's sort of being this requirement.
That's not true.
Okay.
Matthew is on. We all have the same fear, which is when you use the word fairy. It was interesting, and we learned this from the focus groups. When we asked them to describe the movie to us, right? And then they would give us a description, and then we would say to them, well, what do you think if we described it as a fairy tale? They'd go, no! I mean, like that. I mean, like, you go, like, whoa, okay, all right, we're not going to call it that. So it was really sort of an interesting thing. So because it's not a movie that fits into any simple genre, it is an adventure movie, it is a romance, it is a fantasy, it is Neil Gaiman's bizarre worldview. There's going to be some struggle for us to find the way to voice this thing, so we're really going to need you guys to help us. Actually, it's true. We're going to be a very, I think, print-driven movie.
Are you finding as a producer in Hollywood now that you said that this movie Stardust wasn't something that you thought was designed for the masses? But response is so.
I mean, it's expensive enough. You have to expect a certain number of people.
Right.
Yeah, for
but
sure.
But are you finding that movies that maybe are off the beaten path are suddenly what the masses want?
I wish that was true. I'll say it that way. My experience at Warner Brothers and now as a producer is that the people keep telling us to make different kinds of movies and then they don't support them. So a movie like Three Kings, which I think is maybe one of the best movies I was ever involved in, only did $60 million and did nothing overseas. So you get frustrated because your lesson is often the exact opposite of what everybody's telling you you should be doing. You know, Hollywood's selling out, and if only they made smarter movies, and then you make a smart movie, and it's so frustrating, you know? So, unfortunately, the public keeps reinforcing maybe a natural inclination of any corporation, which is to not take risk. The public keeps saying, well, Wild Hogs did $38 million.
I mean, I'm talking about males under 25, generally speaking. I mean, there's wider potential audience, which they frequently have trouble getting to.
Well, you know what? The movies I've been involved in has gotten... Four Brothers in this movie, Shooter, there was a presumption that these were young male movies. That was the presumption. The reality of them is that older females test better than anybody. Everybody's very close to one another. So all four quadrants, as we're fond to talk about, all test the same on both movies. Because when you give somebody, I think, sort of an emotionally pure experience, whether you like it or not, it's, you know, whether you criticize it or not, I think it is what it is. We wear ourselves, we're not shy about wearing what we are on our sleeves. It doesn't segment the audience. The audience is pretty similar across the board. A movie like, I'll tell you a few movies I've been involved in that are not young. Falling Down was not a young male movie, and it only did $55 million, and I think it's one of the smartest movies I was involved in. But what I find is when the more challenging the movie is, the more it polarizes your audience. You know, Wild Hogs is a movie that doesn't polarize its audience. You know, probably pretty fun, I guess. I don't know. I haven't seen it, but it's clearly the audience dug it.
As a producer, do you find that certain doors are easier to open because you were a studio executive?
For sure. And in part, for several things is, you know, I was a successful studio executive, which helps. but the reality of that is that I understand what they're thinking. So, you know, in a lot of situations, you can say, here's what you're thinking. And they go, oh, thank God you said it out loud. You know, they didn't really want to say it to you. Because you don't want people to feel criticized. So I'm the first to say, I know what's going on in your head. You're worried about blah, blah, on Stardust, you're worried about blah, 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 blah. Okay? On Shooter, you're worried about da, 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 da. And that brings the discussion, I think, to a further level as opposed to running into roadblocks, you know? You know, at the end of the day, we're all trying to do the same thing. So if you have a track record of reasonable success over a period of time, you get the advantage until you start failing a lot, you know?
Has Mark Wahlberg signed for a sequel for this? Sometimes
you know, Mark just, you know, so a couple people asked me the question, and I thought there wasn't a deal in place, that because we didn't presume we were making something that was sequelizable. So Mark told me that Paramount had asked him, and like they had put something in the contract, some outrageous number for him or something. So I said, great, I'm already going to negotiate you down. Let's make sure we see it on the screen, you know?
I'm surprised because there's so many books that you didn't consider this as a film
well,
to be
Well, here's why, is that when you go about making movies that you think are sequelizable, you're generally given a certain dollar amount. And we weren't given that dollar amount. We I hate to say only because it sounds so disgusting, but we were only given $63 million. Do you know what I mean? I mean, but Bourne Identity, 4 years ago, spent $95 or $100 million. So when you think about that, that's a when you talk about it on a relative basis, it's only 63. So you don't go in thinking, okay, that's going to be enough to wow everybody and get enough people out there wowed by what we're going to do. And, you know, less money often does demand greater creativity, too. So we do have the advantage of that in this case. You know, it's like a perfect scene to talk about is that when he falls out the window and does the 306. You know, we were sitting there and we had this scene where he fell out a window. And we don't have a lot of money and it's not going to be very interesting. And what are we going to do? You know, so I came up with the idea, let's do have him turn 360 degrees. Haven't seen that. You know, and then somebody else came up with the idea that the glass didn't break, which I think is a great beat. I actually think it's the best beat in that sequence, which is, you know, suddenly you go, you think you're like, wait, what happened, right? You know what I mean? And then the guy shoots the glass out and then it keeps going. So that's where the creativity of limited funds comes in. But still, you don't really, on $63 million, when you have a guy like Mark Wahlberg, who costs some real money, and Antoine and myself, there's a lot of people who are well paid in our group. You don't have that much money to make a big-scale feeling movie, so you don't go in with that presumption. I mean, yeah, there's books, so we thought about it, but we sort of went, well, we don't have enough to do that, so let's just do this really well, you know? And it's nice that everybody has asked us the question, because obviously either you like it or you see success in it, one or the other, or you wouldn't be asking the question.
What else? Was there any production nightmares in this? I'm sorry. Were there any production nightmares in this for you then? You sound like it was just all working great.
No, it didn't all work great. Yeah.
What happened? Yeah. It drove you crazy.
There were a few. The glacier was really hard to do. And doing something at 6,000 feet with a lot of people, myself included, 50 plus, you know, it's taxing up there and it's really hard and trying to deal with that amount of sun and that amount of light and dehydration and falling off the edge and, you know. Helicopters coming in and out. It was really sort of like it was really fun, in that it's you know, an adrenalizing sort of feeling. Like everybody got an 812, so and so's in this helicopter at 816, so and so. Like it's like a military operation, you know. So that part of it is sort of fun and nerve wracking at the same time, you know.
Just gonna ask, what else are you developing or putting into?
The next movie I hope to make is a thing called Nowhere Land, Eddie Murphy committed to. And we're just trying to set a director right now. And a script called Edwin A. Salt, which is a really, really cool movie. At Sony.
Is 1408 already in production, or are you...
It's finished.
Oh.
Not quite. It's finished. That's a movie where we set out, we actually did not shoot the ending. We wanted to see the movie before we shot the ending.
So you haven't shot the ending?
No, we gotta shoot the ending. Yeah. No, it's, you know what? It was a really interesting idea, because the idea of doing a real-time movie in a hotel, one man in a one-bedroom suite for 80 minutes of real time, we didn't know how you'd come out of that. Like, do you need bigger? Do you need smaller? What do you need? Or do you feel like he should die? Do you feel like he should live? What do you feel? I mean... And so we wrote like 15 different endings, because Stephen King's short story doesn't really have an ending. It has sort of a, it's not a, it just sort of ends. And it's not a cinematic ending, I'll say it that way. So that's the last piece of the puzzle, but it's really fascinating to have done a movie all in a room. We all went sort of crazy. This is much smaller. Yeah, I mean, it's one bedroom suite. Fincher did it with a whole house.
Yeah.
And you got to go outside a little bit, you know?
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
I heard about the
most
in Transformers.
Why?
With punching through and stuff.
Yeah.
And I will tell you that I know some people in special effects, and everyone has told me that it's the film somewhere across the
universe. That'd be great. Listen, I'd love to hear that. Yeah.
I'm telling you, I've heard nothing but good things. On top of that, I heard about the Stardust thing. I have friends who saw that test screening, and people have been telling me, they're like, you've got to see this movie.
Oh, good. I'm glad. I'm really glad. We really didn't know how many people were going to go along with our vision of that.
With the Stardust?
Yeah.
I mean, it's Michael Vaughn. I mean, Vaughn's just amazing, you know, and the fact that he dropped out of, you know, X-Men to do Are you trying to work out a contract with him to do something else?
He and I are actually talking about another movie right now. We had a good time together.
Okay.
So you know, we're a good fix. A good fit together. So he likes certain things. We both have similar taste in movies. And we both bring totally different skill sets to the table. So it's really, it's hopefully a 1+1=3. See what you think on Stardust. But,
And with Transformers, do you really think you're going to make that? I mean, no nervousness right now with the effects?
No, we don't. We're far along. It's just, it's a very slow and methodical process on this one. So we're meeting all our dates.